You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Like, it would have been great if this movie had started with, like, a camera a long way away from a guy in a wheelchair, and it just pulls up slowly, so slowly, and it gets closer until you realize it's Tim Curry now. And he's just sitting there looking at the camera, looking tired, and it gets really close, and he goes, "It's..." And we're like, oh, they could do a gory version of the Python opening credits where the foot at the end is dismembered.
Let's show a little respect to Tim Curry.
That is respect to Tim Curry.
Yeah.
We would have liked to have seen him get a paycheck for this.
Yeah. Hey, they're still going to make one more of these. They might be saving him for part
two. Yeah, they need to get some kind of cameo going.
That's, I wouldn't be surprised if he appears, assuming he makes it to the next film.
He's I not honestly doing great. Thought there
well,
would be.
Well, if you did look when he was in the room full of clowns, there was one bust that actually looked exactly.
Yeah, you can see that in the trailer, yeah.
And I was thinking that as well, as the clown is very childlike. Imagine 40-year-old men against a childlike clown. I think the clown's going to have to change.
That's true. I will say the one scene, and I think I said it out loud during it, when the kid's in the room, and they turn the lights, and the room's filled with clowns. I was just like, fuck that room.
I think we all know what Christmas' greatest fear is.
No. I mean, I'm not even really phobic about clowns at all. I mean, you know. But, yeah, a room full of clowns? That's like spiders don't bother me. Snakes don't bother me. But a room filled
spiders?
With snakes and
spiders? How about
don't
giant spider clowns?
Man, cosmic spiders.
I will accept the spoiler ending that might happen of the next film if he turns into a giant spider, as long as he still has clown makeup on. When he does it. It could be a clown
that
spider.
That would be interesting.
I'm just saying.
I mean, what's Sheila the Spider doing these days? She hasn't been in any movies.
I know, that's a shame.
Get her on the phone.
That's what I'm saying. I'm just saying the giant spider technology has come forward by leaps and bounds since the 1990s.
Oh, yes. I remember literally for years, me and a friend used to have a running joke where we'd say, there is no such thing as a good giant spider movie.
Yeah.
Until Sheila in Return of the King. We're like, true. All right, the technology's there. But every time a giant spider showed up in a movie, it looked horrible.
Yeah.
And finally, CGI has allowed some of Stephen King's vision to leak through this movie.
But there is no such thing as a good giant spider.
Arachnophobia?
Oh, no.
I was never crazy about arachnophobia.
Those
were
lots of
spiders.
I'd say the one, what was the one with the, what's his name, wormy guy from Scream? Eight-Legged Freaks. That was pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying, every time you have, if you looked at the original miniseries, which I have a soft spot for, you have, like, actual stop-motion animation.
You do.
And then you cut to some guy screaming while a grip is holding some enormous pipe cleaner leg menacingly at it.
Well,
it
I mean, it
awful.
Was made 27 years
it
ago.
Was. And it was a good thing at the time.
I was never that big a fan of the original miniseries. Yeah. I was like, it's okay.
It was pretty terrible.
I thought it was not that good, but I know a lot of people love it, probably because they were a lot younger than I
you
was when
younger,
they saw it.
We were younger, and it was on prime time. You could actually sit up and watch it, unlike other horror movies where we had to wait till our parents fell asleep and hope they didn't know what we were watching. Here it was like, nope, I'm perfectly good. I can watch this. It's on ABC, and it's just creepy enough that you could enjoy it, but not so bad that you're going to go to bed with nightmares.
Now, this adaptation of Stephen King's It is taking a different tact than the miniseries, which was really trying to go as close to the book as possible,
right.
Even with that pattern of here's when they were young kids, here's them as adults, which are really two different stories that sort of mirror each other with things that are happening.
Right.
Here, this director, Andy Muschietti, who before this really just did Mama, the film, the horror film he did with Guillermo del Toro, which, by the way, I think is well worth seeing, has decided to divide this into two films. One with just the kids and one with just the adults. This being, of course, just the kids. And I feel like what you got here is kind of Stand By Me plus Evil Clown.
100%.
You know?
Yeah.
And I mean that in a very positive way.
I mean, it's very much the movie that if you went to the people who directed Stranger Things and were like, could you make It for us? This is pretty much what you're
getting.
There
was a smidge of Goonies in there, too, I think.
Oh, for sure.
So, yeah, I mean, that all, you know, kind of falls into that big kind of trash can that Stranger Things is, where they just toss all of the 80s.
It's 1988. Yeah. What are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, it definitely does a great job of, like, the scary scenes are scary. There's plenty of times where you're dad, you know, you get good jump scares.
And, yeah, you yeah. literally yeah. jumped, but went ah.
yeah. And we laughed.
Every now and then, like, you know, a movie like the, and that's I'm a good gauge for jump scares because generally I can see them coming from a mile away. And every now and then, like, one of the last ones to get me really good was probably The Sixth Sense.
Yeah,
when the dead lady walks behind the kid when he's peeing, and there was definitely an instant of this.
You know,
God.
Really though, the one in there that got me was the kid going, "You want to see where my dad keeps his guns?" And turns around, and his head's missing.
I remember about The Sixth Sense because I was thinking about that on the way up here. Remember back not so long ago when you had a movie that was anchored by a kid performance, and everyone was like, "Wow, what an amazing child performance!" It was so rare.
Yeah.
And now it's just like, where the hell are they finding all these good kid actors these days? Where were they when we were kids?
And they're probably growing them in vats.
And these kid actors are exceptional. There was nothing in here where I would wear. As it used to be, a performance from a kid brought you out of it. You're like, okay.
You should really go watch this movie because they're going to be a crime wave in the future.
Particularly the kid that played
Georgie,
I thought.
Those kids couldn't get work. Yeah, I think these kids will get work.
They'll definitely get
work. Their voices change.
As anyone, I mean, if you're totally unfamiliar with it, if you haven't read it or seen any version of the story, it's the town of Derry, which Stephen King has since established borders on Castle Rock. It's next door.
Thanks, Stephen.
And this kid's younger brother gets sucked into the sewers by what's his name? Bill Skarsgård playing the evil clown in a rather surprisingly gory sequence. Yeah. Like, wow, I did not see that coming for a child death.
That's and that is the more closer to the book.
Very much. That's right out of the book.
His older brother can't, like, it's months later and he's just refuses to let this go. His parents are, like, yelling
at
him.
He's not bouncing back like most of us do when a sibling disappears.
Dude, I was fine right after. I was like,
well, you had lots of siblings.
I was like, where are we eating lunch?
You know what I like, though, story-wise, is they skip, like, when that bad thing happens to Georgie, it goes a year later.
Yeah.
And I love they do that so you don't have to deal with any of the bullshit that comes with mourning.
Yeah.
Like, literally, one year later,
do that in real life.
Life goes on.
Wake up when mourning has passed.
How many stages of grief? Bullshit.
Yeah. 1 year later, motherfucker.
There's one. Flash forward.
The one stage of grief.
I mean, the neighbor who saw what happened, she got no grief at all. I mean, she just goes blood, and then 1 year later.
Are you the deafest old lady on the block? Holy fuck.
There are little hints of that throughout the book. One of the horrible things about Derry is horrible shit happens. And no one really
And all the adults
shit.
Ignore it.
They ignore it. They're scared. Like when one of the kids is getting beaten up and a couple drive by and they just ignore it. That's the horror of the town. Everybody knows,
a case of illustrating how everyone is a bastard.
Yeah. It's like a rotten town.
Yeah, and that's kind of key to the story is this group of kids who slowly kind of come together in what they kind of refer to themselves as the Losers Club. They're all kind of outcasts. They start to realize that this town actually has a real history of that, that people go missing a lot in this town or just die horribly in accidents. And so what the hell is up with that? And it seems to be happening a lot. And maybe there's a cycle involved here. Pretty smart.
Generally, that means you have vampires.
I know. And they rule that out.
Salem Slot's right down the street.
Yeah, I forget. Salem Slot is right down the street, actually. So.
No. We're the other murder capital of Maine.
It's like, if we stay in Derry
near Springville and Shelbyville,
it would make more sense if Stephen King would set more of his shit in, I don't know, New Jersey.
No, that's where the real horror starts. That's where the only way we can survive is to get out of Derry. Great, let's all move to Castle Rock where everything will be wonderful forever. Just, it's a county over. Come on. But yeah, we watch these kids come together and there's a lot of very sort of Bildungsroman, like the coming of age stuff here that I feel like works much better than it almost has any right to, considering.
Yeah, works better than if you read the plot outline for the book, you're like, really?
No, that stuff works pretty well in the book. You know, one of the things that really sells this movie, and you could line a whole shelf with lousy Stephen King adaptations.
True.
There's a lot of them. But the ones that succeed, more often than not, they do so because they focus on character and they allow enough time for that story to develop organically and for us to become invested in those characters rather than them just being random pieces of meat we're waiting to get killed.
Yeah, and here, shoving it down our throats.
And here they really did that. And I remember,
Dark Tower.
Yeah. I seen the running time for this, 2 hours and 17 minutes. I was like, but then by the end, I was like, oh, thank God they did it as long as they did, because it gives everyone, all the characters, time to breathe and develop and feel organic in their relationships with each other.
Almost. There's a lot of stuff that has been trimmed out, some of which may be...
Some of which was necessary.
Yeah. Some of it's necessary.
I mean, if they gave everybody their like moment in the sun, it would be a 3-hour
I was told that...
A miniseries?
Because there is, as I said, going to be a second movie, and I was told that they've already filmed scenes with these kids for the second movie. So, like, you know, let's go ahead and do it while we're making this.
Thinking about it.
Oh, they're definitely doing it.
I mean,
because
those
kids
are growing fast. Can't wait.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, get that out of the way now so they look the same age. Because, you know, when you're that age, you're like, 1 month, you're this height, and the next month, you're a foot and a half taller, so, or like talk like this all of a sudden.
I mean, that is the same.
Are you having flashbacks?
One month you're Wednesday Addams, and then the next month you have tits. Holy shit!
It's the miracle of nature. But yeah, I feel like I was overall really pleased with this thing. I was pleasantly surprised all the acting. I was more than anything. There was a point early on I was like, man, I love these kids. I love their stories. The horror stuff is okay. But by God time I got to the halfway point, there's a sequence where, like, with Pennywise and a projector that I was like, gah! and really from that point on, I was like, okay, now this is scary.
This is a great thing about this movie, because it knows that most of the people watching are not familiar with the miniseries, not familiar with the book. It has to be accessible. But for book readers, you're going to be following along going, oh, well, there's that thing. Oh, they're not using that thing. Why is that thing there and it's not being used? Oh, shit, that's new. It's a really good way to sort of play off audience expectations, give people a way into the story, and also reward, I think, longtime fans of the book.
Yeah, somebody doesn't even remember reading the book anymore. I know I did, but I couldn't tell you any differences. I enjoyed
spoiler,
the
spoiler. It's a giant spider.
Okay, I remember that.
It's not a giant spider. That's just what their feeble human brains can. That's the only thing they can envision.
It's a giant spider, Marco.
I'm sorry. It's really a couple of lights.
That's right.
I've actually read the book probably like 3 or 4 times, and I was actually mad at myself halfway through the movie going, I should have read the book again. I should have read the book again.
I read
again.
It last year. So
I
think it's been like, it's probably been at least 5 years.
When you're on your deathbed, I'm going to play this video back for you. Where I'll be like, no, where you were like, I read it 3 or 4 times. And you're like, I could have had like 25 more hours to do stuff.
It's a good book.
It is. It is one of
the best. You know what they say? Everyone on their deathbed spends time thinking, man, if I had only read more Stephen King.
Or less. I mean, I read the Tommyknockers. That's time I'm never going to
read. Okay, yeah. I mean, that was serious cocaine.
Yeah. Tommyknockers is the worst thing ever.
Even Stephen King admits, I don't remember writing this book. He does not remember writing that damn book.
Yeah, everybody in the 80s were like, man, this guy's so prolific. How does he do it? I've got an idea.
I feel like there should be a spinoff of Orphan Black that's about a young Stephen King. You know, it turns out there's 9 of him. It's the only thing that makes sense. I don't know. I mean, even if I wrote all day, every day, I still wouldn't be able to match his output. I don't know how he does it.
He is prolific.
And unlike other writers, James Patterson, he actually does write his own stuff.
He writes his own stuff. And made, no ghostwriters.
It made me wonder, because in the beginning of this, there's a little intro with Stephen King, and you like wonder if like out of hand, out of camera, he's just typing with one hand.
I'm Stephen King, and I want to tell you to enjoy this movie while I write 3 sequels.
You know he's there talking
to him
right now. By
the time this interview is over, I'll have written the first draft.
Yes, I just completed the first draft of that.
It lives again. You know somebody at Hollywood is going, in his ear, come on, I'm just saying. There's got to be a something is there.
I know they killed Pennywise, but what if they didn't?
What if the hotel didn't blow up? What if the hotel was a giant spider?
Wait, you sound like the producer of whatchamacallit, that Superman film that never got made. The giant robot. What if he fights a giant robot spider?
Yeah. That's how we got the Wild Wild West.
No, I agree with you, though. The first 30 to 40 minutes. I was like, I've seen this before. Mm-hmm. It's good, but... But that projector scene, it just went 10 out of 10 for me after that.
And it kept going, yeah.
Because it was rewarding people that had seen the miniseries or read the book. I never read the book. I was a young man or a little boy when the miniseries came out, and I loved it. We were talking about it. Don't age yourself.
He was a very little boy.
Yeah. Little boy. I was Georgie's age.
I was a small child learning to be a woman.
But I've got to say, when you brought up the fact that people turn a blind, I hadn't even thought about that, but do you think they probably survived the same shit?
Yeah.
I mean, and they're terrified of it, and they just, and I never thought about that
thing. You definitely got that undercurrent with, you know, the hypochondriac kid that his mom was just like, you know, I'm trying to keep you safe. Eat your sugar pills.
The entire town is kind of in denial. And one of the things that, again, in the book, the kids do a lot more investigation. I think some of that is left off because we're going to get a little more backstory for it in the second half.
I just got to say, people in Maine are lazy. If this had been happening in Massachusetts, they would have organized some kind of lottery or, you know, gotten some kind of deal out of it where the crops are always good. All you got to do is just give it a couple of kids every 30 years and you're gold.
If this shit had happened in Texas, there'd be a posse going to the sewers right now.
Sure.
Grandma, get your gun. We're going down to them sewers.
One kid got missing and every one of your neighbors would reveal they have an armory in their garage. Like, all right, I got my Gatlin. Who's ready?
Find that clown, ask him if he's a legal citizen, and then cap his ass. You know?
Something interesting,
too,
though.
We gotta build a wall to keep all them clowns out.
Did you guys notice, though, like, he only shows the kids' families who have shitty families.
Yeah.
Like other kids, it's like, hey, that kid might have a normal family. You ain't going to see his family.
That's because
only the rapey,
rapey dad.
It's because they're vulnerable.
Preys on misery. And another thing that
it isn't a giant spider. He's a porn producer.
Or you could have just said producer.
He is sort of the ultimate voyeur. He loves to create tension. He doesn't have to kill these people. He prefers eating children. But, you know, hey, if I want to start a gang warfare in the middle of the street and just watch people die, that's like better than HBO for anyone.
He's the Leland Gaunt of clowns.
Yeah.
I suppose that's true.
It is really one of the more iconic characters that Stephen King has created, and I don't know that Bill Skarsgård is quite as instantly iconic as Tim Curry, but we've had almost 30 years with Tim Curry.
So I mean, Tim Curry brings so much charisma to that character. He makes him so scary by force of personality.
He's a known quantity.
And a lot that's going on here that makes this version so scary is indeed effects work and the choices made by the director of how to show him. But that's some pretty impressive stuff that he's got going on there. Some of the things they do with him are like unsettling to say the least.
His skill set is so good. Greatly expanded in this. I mean, Tim Curry was like, look, all I can do is act. When you cut to the special effects, this show is going to go down the tubes. And it did. The minute he's out and they replace him with an effect, the movie sucked, or the miniseries.
Yeah.
But Bill Skarsgård has all this technology to help bolster that performance.
It's very
true. Driving that performance, but man...
He manufactured that drool all on his own.
He did. He drools a lot.
He's very
drooly. He does drool a lot.
Yeah.
He studied that for hours.
It's not a good thing for a clown. Why is it like he's the only, like,
You'll find that any child, any clown surrounded by delicious children will be drooling quite
a
bit.
It is odd that it's the clown who's the only adult male in this film that's not perving on the teenage girl. Really? The clown is safe?
Just like real life.
He doesn't have to do it because he's controlling her dad.
True.
Now, question, because I didn't read the book. The only kid that feared the clown was Richie. Was it? I mean, because he is a clown to everybody, but yet he's supposed to prey on your fears. Why is he a clown to everybody when Richie is the guy who's scared of clowns?
That's a new change to the book.
That's a new change
because they're like, all right, back in the 80s, kids, people were not scared of clowns the way they are
today. That's true.
It was not a thing. People were like,
we just thought they were boring and dull.
Yeah. You know, you just went to see him at a birthday party at the circus, maybe in the annoying mime every once in a while.
Adults labored with the piss apprehension that children love clowns, even though none of us did.
Sure.
So when they made this movie, I thought they just leaned into the whole clown thing. But Richie's, and this is again, I won't spoil it in case it shows up later on in the second film, you see the thing that attacks Richie in the book.
Mm.
You see it prominently displayed. And I thought, oh, okay, here it comes. they're not doing that.
It makes you go, is it just a different clown?
It's just
he's like
it's not
rich
even a clown.
Because he appears
a totally different thing.
Appears to everybody some version of their own personal fears, and it's just that would be funny. Richie's already afraid of clowns. He's like, oh, okay, now I'm a different clown.
Yeah.
I don't know how I would be.
Clowns.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know how I would be attacked by the fact that everyone was finding out that I really don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Yeah, true.
How does that manifest? Yeah.
I will say, the kid who played Richie, though, his comedic timing was on point.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I was in stitches the entire movie.
Supernatural.
One of the things I thought that was so great was that the humor really works in this thing. Even in the middle of a horror sequence, sometimes there's stuff that makes you laugh out loud.
They do a really good job. You know, whoever's doing the writing, it's just like, yep, that's how all my friends talked in the fucking 80s.
That is actually an improvement over the book and the miniseries, because honestly...
Yeah.
Richie was always written as the funny kid, and you only accepted him as the funny kid because Stephen King and everybody told you, this is the
funny
kid. But he was always kind of more annoying. This kid actually is like, okay, I get it why he's the class clown. He is the funny kid. Oh. And he has the lines to back it up, and he curses like every 13-year-old boy I ever went to school.
Yeah, they don't mess around with it. These are real kids, not movie kids.
Yeah, and
kids,
if you were a boy in the 80s, you had some friend that would fuck the word fuck if he could figure out how to do it.
Exactly.
And he would talk about getting all the pussy that he'd ever had, and you're like, you've never been within a mile of a woman.
Yeah.
what are you talking about?
As well, like, I had friends with that hypochondriac kid who was, like, afraid of everything. I was like, oh, I heard that, or would lie incessantly about.
If I see a peanut, I'll swell up and die.
Yeah. Or all the AIDS talk. Like, you could get AIDS. I'm like, oh, yeah. Everybody talked about that. Mm-hmm.
Remember
true.
That?
Can you imagine if the internet had been around then?
Oh, Jesus Christ. All the amount of misinformation.
And the music, like, the music in the actual movie
was
fantastic.
Yeah, the music was great.
Cuts.
Very nostalgic.
It felt like it was more in the 80s than the actual original miniseries.
Oh my God, I actually bought a copy of Electric by the Cult.
Oh, you shut your mouth right now.
But the miniseries couldn't afford all of those song licenses, but they could for the movie.
Well, I got to throw props as well to one of the writers here was Cary Fukunaga, who was originally assigned to direct this, and I think it was because of delays he had to move on to something else, but... He wrote a good portion of the script, and if you don't know who that is, he directed the first season of True Detective, and he wrote and directed Beasts of No Nation, which is terrific. So, yeah, not really surprising to find out, wow, there was some solid talent behind this thing.
Mm. Yeah, well, the thing, when he left the project, I got excited when I heard, this was like a year or two ago, that he was going to do it, and I thought, oh, all right. And then suddenly he was gone, and his original Pennywise was also gone, and the rumor was that, you know, he left because the studio was like, wanting it to be PG-13 and the tone was too rough and they got to, you know, make it more accessible. And I'm very happy to say that this film earns its R rating, which is great. I mean,
there's lots of blood.
Yeah, lots of blood, a lot of cursing.
But it wasn't overly gratuitous gore.
No.
I mean, the gore was like perfectly done. It wasn't like, you know,
no film is perfect, basically.
No film is.
But I mean, in a lot of rated R, you know, horror films, they just go for it.
Sure.
And this was just like had that nice balance.
There was enough that it's just like, oh, this blood-soaked room is actually scary.
Yeah, exactly.
There hasn't been a lot of blood in this movie. So.
Yeah, exactly. It was scary blood, gritty blood.
That sequence reminded me, I don't know if anybody else, right off the bat, that we're talking about blood in the bathroom, The Shining in the elevator. I can't help but call back to that in my head.
I think that's a slightly conscious choice, but that's also in the book, too. So that's apparently a thing Stephen King has. Just doorways or portals that open and just unleash massive amounts of blood.
Never happens to me. I'm very disappointed.
But just pulling that scene off, I can only imagine reading that on paper and being like, how the fuck do you make this work? And they pull, I was like, I mean, it's one of the best scenes in the movie.
Absolutely.
And it was very powerful, and it's something that sounds stupid on paper, I bet. Right. Like, really,
and
that's what happens?
True.
Everybody was saying, oh, the gore is what makes things work.
Sometimes
it's really good. I mean, also, I mean, if you're creeped out by hair in the drain, you're not going to like this scene. But what makes that scene work, and this isn't a spoiler, but it's like it stays there. That's what's creepy.
Yeah.
In a lot of movies, there are people like, oh, they close their eyes and it'd be gone. And they're like, oh, no shit. It's still here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now we have to deal with the consequences of what
that
happened.
That bed really did eat Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
It's still belching. It's been 12 hours. There's little bits of Johnny Depp coming out.
Johnny Depp's very gassy.
It's going on eBay for a minute right now.
If you ate nowadays... Johnny Depp, you'd probably be tasting hobo in your mouth.
If you saw any of the Pirates of the Caribbean sequels, you might wish it had. All right, well, let's go to final thoughts, guys. Who wants to go first? Takers?
I'll go first.
All right, Patience.
As a diehard Stephen King fan, I am so over the moon right now. Like, this is the Stephen King film adaptation that I've been waiting for since The Mist, I think. This is definitely going to be top five, I think, Stephen King adaptations of all time. For horror films, not for his not horror stuff.
Sure.
I loved it. I thought that Bill Skarsgård, I thought he did an amazing job. I was really, really reticent because he had a big britches to fill, you know, with Tim Curry's legendary performance as Pennywise. And I thought Bill Skarsgård took it to a different level. He didn't go in the same direction. And I thought he did an excellent job there. The kid actors were fantastic. The script was great. The comedic, you know, jokes. Thank you, Jack. Were really good. The comedic timing
of our cat to knock stuff over
Was fantastic. And I give it 99 left balloons.
Nice.
Wow. Out of 100.
That was perfect.
Thank you.
Rotten.
Yeah, I really liked it too. I mean, is it a perfect movie? No, there's definitely characters walking into rooms where they should be armed with nothing in their hands, and people going indoors they shouldn't be going into without their friends. A lot of that, which I looked at Bo like once or twice because he and I had the same, like, why would you walk off by yourself when there's
don't do that.
Like, and it happened at least 15 times in this movie.
Yeah.
But you know what? But in saying that, it's so forgivable because it's so entertaining. It's fun. It's scary once it gets to more dark scenes.
Yeah.
I felt like a lot of the daytime stuff for the first 30 minutes weren't scary and felt like if you saw the miniseries are very similar. But as soon as it got past that and it got a little darker, like meaning the actual light came down, not the tone of the movie, it got a little more creepy once they got inside some of these buildings and whatnot. But I loved it. Definitely my favorite remake I've seen in a long, 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 long time. So, two thumbs up and a clap.
Two thumbs up and a clap? Sure, why not? It's our arbitrary rating system.
Yeah, there you go.
Marco.
You know, Patience told me once that we never agree on a movie anytime we review something together.
This is true.
I think this, you know,
this
mark,
might be the
mark
one
your
time.
Calendar, kids. This is the day it finally happened. Patience and I are in total agreement and love this film equally. I think this joins the very short list of genuinely great Stephen King adaptations. It is a lot of fun. It takes the time to invest in the characters so that by the time shit hits the fan, you are fully strapped in for this ride. I can't wait for part two, and I hope it's half as good as this one is. I give this 9 out of 10 creepy, distorted Amadeo Modigliani paintings come to life.
Yeah, this is.
Did you look that up on the way over here?
No, I happen to know that. I was like, oh, a Modigliani painting.
I love you, Marco.
You don't know that often?
Yes, I love Modigliani.
I can't even pronounce that name.
I love Modigliani more than anything else. I like it better than his paintings. But yeah, this really, you know, it's almost as if, you know, I remember when they really first started getting the Marvel Universe right, and people were like, oh, well, the people that grew up, you know, knowing nothing but comics are finally making the comic book movies, and this feels like, you know, the Stephen King fans were behind this, because it does such a great service to the book, you know, calls back the stuff that does work about the miniseries, and yet you're still getting this, you know, very original but nostalgic feel. And I'm generally the first guy that does not like it when a movie tries to be more than the one thing it should be. But this movie manages to be two or three different things.
That's true. Yeah.
And it does a really good job at all of that. Yeah, it's a little long, but as we've kind of mentioned, you know, there are a lot of characters here to get to know. There's a lot of backstory. So I was patient with that fact. Aside from the occasional, like, whoops, I left my ammunition belt precariously balanced and it dropped thing, which I always hate. There was very little in this movie that made me roll my eyes or didn't engross me. I give it a very solid 9.5 colossally gigantic spiders.
There were no spiders in
this
movie.
It's all a giant spider.
Yes, but wait till you get to the turtle.
That's if you actually take every frame of this film and lay it on top of every other frame, it's just...
It's a giant spider.
No, the movie itself is a spider.
It's just black.
Speaking of turtles, I do want to say really quick, one of the things I did love about Pennywise was the snapping turtle mouth.
Oh,
that
shit
was fucked up.
Oh,
the little deadlight scene where he opens up his mouth.
So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I really love this. We went in very sort of cautiously optimistic, having heard good reviews, but it quickly really won me over. And as I said before, I think the running time doesn't hurt it at all. I can't imagine it being better by being shorter. Yeah. I think this was like about as short as they could have made it and have
Tower.
It work. Yeah, Dark Tower was like, let's make it really short.
We'll make it 90 minutes.
And then it's not so good. This, makes up a lot for the bad blood we all have from the Dark Tower. But yeah, across the board, really enjoyed this. Thought it was really funny, really clever, excellent Stephen King adaptation, one of the best. I give it 9 out of 10 very complicated explanations to the townspeople when the kids point out, here's all the dead kids and a weird tower of junk. Because boy, that's going to be we never saw that in the book. Like, wait, what? Like, and then of course all the parents will be like, oh, well, that's normal, I guess. Fucking parents.
If they can even see it.
True. They'll be like, what dead kids? I don't see anything. Yep. You kids are all grounded.
You think they're going to go and actually tell anybody what they just did?
Well, they got to tell everybody's anyway. Dead kids are in this place now on the ground. And be like, hey, here's the kids. Enjoy.
I want to see Ben's stomach in the next movie. That dude got cut up so much in this movie.
I know, right? I mean, he's just constantly getting hit.
I do wish, in a perfect world, the original miniseries would have cast Jerry O'Connell right after he did Stand By Me. And then waited years to film the second half and cast the real Jerry O'Connell, because something similar happens to Ben, where he's like, I discover salad and working out. And now you look like Jerry O'Connell, but you're like, you used to be the fat kid from Stand By Me.
Yeah, I don't think they should do it now, though. Jerry O'Connell has proven as an adult, maybe not the best actor in the world. Maybe we could get a parallel
but
universe.
But he was a great fat kid actor back in his day.
He really
amongst
was.
Amongst the best of the fat
Bring
kid
back
actors.
Will Wheaton.
Bring back Will Wheaton. Yes, give Will Wheaton work.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.